Welcome to The Road Untraveled. Today we have the Moore twins, who I've gotten to know through my 4 years in venture as well as during stints when we overlapped at Goldman. They are good friends and great investors now at CRV, where they focus on consumer and mobile investing. I saved this fun episode as a special back to school because Olivia and Justine have done a really phenomenal job covering the tech ecosystems at leading college campuses like Stanford and Berkeley in order to find the next big tech companies and learn from the brightest minds that will lead the future of tech. They are at Venture Twins on Twitter and also run a weekly newsletter called Accelerated that's doing really well, focused on students that are interested in tech and VC. I hope you enjoy. This is The Road Untraveled. Hey, Justine and Olivia, how are you?
We're good. How are you?
Fantastic. I am so thrilled to have the Venture Twins, as some people know them, Justine and Olivia, as I know them. Justine and Olivia are investors at CRV, but do a variety of things in the college campus community and so many cool things for people trying to break into venture. And so thrilled to have you guys on the show. So thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having us. We're so happy to be here.
I'd love to just start, if you could give people a little bit of a sense of Accelerated. It's obviously a platform that is near and dear to your hearts, and you built it from scratch. So just help people understand what Accelerated is, and then hopefully also for some founders listening, tell them about the liftoff list.
Yeah, that's a great question. So as a little bit of background, we went to school at Stanford undergrad, but we were originally from a suburb of Portland, Oregon. And so when we got to Stanford, we found that a lot of the other students kind of knew all about startups and Silicon Valley venture firms and how to get jobs and things like that. And we had a bit less context on that. And I think it always felt like we would love really accessible, approachable resources for understanding the lingo, like knowing what was going on in tech news if you didn't have time to read TechCrunch and all of the amazing daily newsletters that people do. And then also just knowing like, how do you pick a startup to work for over the summer? Or how do you get a job at a venture firm?
Yeah.
And so we put together Accelerated as kind of the resource that we wished we had had when we were in college.
And we started it, I think the first week that we started at CRV, which is coming up on 3 years ago, yeah. Which is crazy to think about. And it started out with just, you know, maybe a couple dozen and then a couple hundred of our kind of friends from Stanford, other people who had recently graduated or were still in school and trying to kind of find their way. And then it spread. Most of our audience is still students, but now I would say upwards of 200 different schools. So we'll see where, you know, it gets distributed at a certain school, and then we'll have a ton of new readers from that place in any given week. And a lot of our readers reach out to us about what they're seeing on their campuses and what they're excited about, which has been really kind of fun and rewarding for us.
Yeah.
It's for free pipeline.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that has been an unexpected benefit, which has been awesome. And we're always pleasantly surprised by the amazing leads that we get from students, both for kind of on-campus startups and then also just trends or other startups we should know about that college students are often the first people to use.
Yeah, totally.
Absolutely. I will say I was late to TikTok, but I'm fully there now.
For sure.
Yeah, we spend an embarrassing amount of time on TikTok. We're not really TikTok creators.
No.
I would say we're just very, very active watchers.
Yeah.
I love it. Let's talk a little bit about building your personal brand, because I know that that's something, whether you're in venture or you're a founder, that you do need to or should think about spending a little bit of time doing. I'd love to just think back to your early days of whether it's launching the newsletter or just how you got into venture. Some of the things that you think are effective for people to be doing now if they're just getting started.
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. I think the idea of building a digital brand actually was kind of favorable to our strengths as investors, because the two of us are probably more introverted than a lot of people might assume. And so, you know, going to networking events and parties and kind of building a network through that was less appealing and kind of more stressful for us. Mm-hmm. And so we were kind of excited about the chance to build almost like a content arm online that could help us both get out there more and then probably reach like a different and broader audience than we would have just going to a lot of kind of SF tech events and meetups and stuff with people that we already know.
Yeah, I think maybe one of the most helpful things we did in school was we co-founded a startup incubator at Stanford, and through that got to meet a ton of awesome VCs and kind of be sending them deal flow. And so they kind of came to know us as people who were in the know on campus and could talk about what college students were interested in. And then I think working full time now, we've kind of extended that brand through our work with Accelerated.
It's tough though. I think to the question about brand building, especially in tech and VC, it's a really noisy ecosystem. Like, there's a ton of people creating content. And so I think for us, just kind of knowing who our audience is, like, we do have a lot of investors and CEOs and other people reading the newsletter every week, but every decision we make, from like what to put in there to how we write about it, is like catered to this college students and recent grads, which I think has helped it grow.
That's great. So a little bit of a focus push as you think about content creation. That's awesome. Let's talk a little bit about how you guys track consumer investment trends. So I know obviously one piece is, you know, being boots on the ground and having students sending you things, but I'm curious if there's other things that you think are effective to help you sort of monitor the TikToks of the world before they become the TikToks.
Yeah, consumers, a really interesting one, because things take off really quickly and they can sometimes seem kind of random. I think it's honestly just helpful to spend a ton of time online on places like Twitter and Instagram and Reddit, and following like a very diverse range of creators who are not your age, like, do not live where you do, like, totally different from you. So you can see the types of things they're talking about or new apps or products that they mention. And you can start to get a sense of what is getting popular, or maybe what are people interested in. And then I think there's more kind of data-driven approaches too, where there's great resources like App Annie, where you can get a free account and you can kind of monitor. We spend a lot of time going through the App Store charts and seeing across all different categories what types of apps are rising in the App Store.
Yeah, I think the other component of that I want to mention is that the internet is such a big place now that even what looks like a niche product can be a really interesting investment opportunity. And so that might not pop up in the top, you know, 50 or 100 on the App Store, but it still might have huge potential to grow and monetize really well. And so I think from that perspective, spending time in more niche communities on like Reddit and Twitter, and just kind of recognizing that the barrier to entry, if you're not being paid for it as a consumer to like post a review or a video or something about a new app you're using, like, that barrier is actually very high. So if people are going out of their way to kind of create content about a new app or startup that they're excited about, we take that really seriously.
Yeah,
that's great. Let's talk a little bit about customer acquisition costs within the consumer space, because I think that that's also shifting in a sense where, you know, we are all spending way more time online than pre-COVID. But if you look at sort of ad spend, it's not really lining up. Companies aren't as interested in paying the amounts and premiums they were paying before in order to sort of collect eyeballs. I'm curious if you're watching anything or monitoring anything in the sort of ad spend space for consumer, and kind of how you think about CAC going forward.
Yeah, I think what we've heard from a lot of consumer companies, both our portfolio companies and outside our portfolio, is that they saw a big drop kind of at the beginning of COVID in online ad spend, or like CPCs across a lot of different platforms, and it's kind of bouncing back up again, unfortunately. I think what we try to focus on is, especially at the early stages, how can companies find differentiated marketing channels and try to get as much organic distribution as possible? Because especially as an early stage company that's raised a little bit of money, one of the easiest ways to go out of business is to spend that money quickly on ad platforms when you don't yet have product market fit and you're not going to retain those users over time and monetize the service. So I think we have always kind of advised companies when possible to focus on either alternative platforms that are really targeted to their demographic, where the CACs might be lower, and then as much as possible, like, organic distribution, how to leverage kind of your biggest proponents.
The rise of TikTok has actually been a big player, I think, in consumer customer acquisition recently, and one that, to be honest, we're still trying to figure out, because we see probably a couple apps a day that enter the top 100 or 200. And you talk to the founder and they say that someone made a viral video about them on TikTok. And, you know, some of those apps, to Justine's point, if they can't retain the users, they'll fall back down just as quickly in the app store. So it's not, TikTok is not yet a scalable or repeatable channel, I would say, for customer acquisition. So sorting through some of the noise around that kind of thing is an interesting challenge in consumer right now.
Yeah.
That's really fascinating. Let's sort of put on your founder hat for a second and talk about building businesses in this time. To your point, maybe it's a little bit easier to jump to the top 100 on the App Store, but maybe it's also even harder to stay there. So there's certainly trade-offs to building a company right now. I'm curious if you think it's a good time to be building right now and any advice you may have for founders that are trying to build in the consumer space.
Yeah, I think it's a complicated issue. I mean, we know friends who wanted to start a company, but things are so uncertain right now that they are choosing to stay at their big tech company and get a big tech salary for a little while longer. And then we also know friends who are like, you know what, people are on their phones more than ever before. They're willing to download new things. They want to stay connected to friends and family members when they can't see them in person. Like, this is the perfect time for me to kind of make the leap and build my new consumer social app or product. I think we tend to be very product-oriented investors. So we tend to focus on what products are truly differentiated and enable like a 10x better experience for users. And especially in consumer, a lot of that is around, are there things you can do or types of content you can create on the app that is different from any other platform? Like, I think you see with every major social platform that has been successful, like Snap and TikTok and Instagram, they're allowing people to create and share content that they couldn't share on the incumbent platforms. And so I think if you have an idea of a platform that kind of enables that, then this is a really great time to be launching it, because people are spending more time on their phone. They're at home, they're bored, they're looking for things to do.
That's super cool. Let's put on your investor hat now and talk a little bit about, you know, your role at CRV as you think about sourcing. You know, we talked a little bit about having the students helping you a little bit with more of the accelerated platform. But as far as sourcing for CRV, you know, you can't meet people and look them in the eye anymore. You kind of have to figure things out over Zoom. It's a very new experience. I'm curious if you've found anything helpful and kind of how you think about sourcing in this type of environment.
It's interesting. I would say, like, our strategy, Justine and I as a team, is we just love meeting founders even, you know, a year or so before we might be a great partner to them, just to get to know, like, what's their strategy on the market? You know, who are they looking to hire? Can we be helpful with that? What are their goals for the product? That kind of thing. And I think a lot of investors do that if they have time, and it helps in an environment like this, because many of the founders we're engaging with now are people that we have met or interacted with before in more normal times. And Absolutely. So we have a bit of a benchmark for what the business looked like or was supposed to look like, and how COVID might be uniquely impacting it.
Yeah, I would say too, it helps, like I mentioned before, that a lot of how we find out about cool consumer things is through online places like Twitter and Reddit. And we spend a ton of time on LinkedIn looking for interesting founders and on places like Product Hunt. And you're still able to do all of that type of sourcing online only, and then just doing calls with founders over Zoom. I think one of the kind of challenging things about COVID for consumer companies is some have been just completely wiped out, like travel and restaurants and physical retail. And then other categories like education and some types of social apps are seeing insane boosts in usership, and you're not quite sure like how they're going to retain users over time. And so kind of having those discussions with our team has been really interesting over the past couple of months.
Or even with founders, because I think a lot of them are pretty honest about the fact that they don't expect to see this kind of growth moving forward once things return to a more normal environment. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that's especially interesting in consumer, because a lot of their valuations come actually from user growth, or at least what the curve looks like from a forecasting perspective, as opposed to, you know, what the top line revenue actually is. And so if this curve all of a sudden has accelerated, whether or not they're being honest with you is actually fairly important around whether or not they think they're going to be able to retain those users in a world where everyone is back to, you know, driving cars and going to bars and whatever it may be. So that's super interesting. I'm curious if, you know, if you think about the founder, I call it sort of the founder checklist right now, like the types of things that you think, you know, every day or every week founders should just be thinking about that might not have really been top of mind for them before COVID, whether it's mental health, whether it's how their employees are dealing with remote work, just kind of anything that you think, or maybe in looking into the CRV portfolio that you've seen good founders do as a best practice in this sort of sense of a checklist or a sort of weekly to-do.
We've definitely done some kind of event series with our portfolio, and we're encouraging our companies to think about how you can do things virtually to keep the team connected and then also make sure that people are taking time off. Because I think for some people, like when you have your computer in front of you and there's nothing really else to do, keep on working, which is tough in the long term when you're worried about burnout.
Yeah. I think another thing that we've seen companies maybe do well is almost over communicating both to their employees and then I think as investors to communicate with our companies about you know, how much cash we have reserved for additional funding if they need it, other ways we can be helpful to them, people we might be able to connect with. I think founders on the employee side, there's a lot of employees who are seeing huge cuts at big tech companies and are frankly probably pretty scared for. And so just to the extent that you can, being able to be transparent around how the business is doing, status, and what moves make the company going forward is great.
That's awesome. I want to go back for those that may be listening that are kind of thinking about making their way into venture. You know, we talked a little bit about how you built your personal brand, but I'm curious, you know, you've both spent some time as we all did at Goldman together. And I think we certainly get some remarkable building blocks and sort of early training that helps us, you know, be good at our job. I'm curious if there's things that you've learned in venture that maybe weren't as obvious while you were learning at Goldman that you think are helpful for people that are trying to break into the industry.
Goldman, it was kind of like they would tell you which meetings to attend and your days were kind of filled for you and you were told what to do, how to do it, and when to do it by. And in venture, at an early stage firm, it's a lot about you kind of have an empty calendar. And while you can often shadow a partner and attend partnership meetings and sometimes board meetings, it's kind of up to you to figure out like how to source and when and how you're going to meet with companies and how you're going to do diligence. And so you have to kind of be comfortable with taking that initiative and having a little bit more uncertainty. Like there's definitely weeks where it feels like you get to Friday and you're like, did I actually do anything valuable that might lead to an investment this week? And there's other weeks where you're just overwhelmed by the number of amazing companies you've talked to and you have so much to do and you're so excited to bring them into the broader group. So I think being willing to kind of ride those ups and downs is really important.
For sure. I think the benefit of somewhere like a Goldman is, first of all, great structured training programs, which I think a lot of venture firms, even the larger ones, don't have.
Yeah.
And then kind of the resources of an organization that can help you solve, you know, logistical or other problems really quickly, even research problems, so you can just kind of execute on the core tasks of your job. And so trying to build some of those structures in some way around ourselves in venture, like building our own expert networks of people, whether they're our readers or our colleagues or people at other funds that we can kind of collaborate with, has been a fun and interesting challenge.
Yeah.
I love that. Last one for you. This has been so fun. I really appreciate you both being here. You know, I think at some point we will hopefully return to a state of the norm where you can grab dinner with founders and go back to some of our prior things. I'm curious if you think you'll bring anything with you from sort of what you're doing now, whether it's the way you work remotely, whether it's the way you collaborate, whether it's your mental health learnings, just any sort of silver linings on things that you might have learned during this process?
I think that certainly us in venture, and probably the Bay Area and Silicon Valley and the venture community as a whole, has a tendency to just be kind of moving really fast all the time and worried about winning the deal and getting things done and, you know, helping put out fires with our portfolio companies and other places. And this has been a really interesting opportunity to approach every kind of meeting or interaction with a new level of maybe empathy and understanding, just because everyone that we, you know, we still are talking with around the same number of people every week, but a lot of them have, you know, been forced out of their offices, or they have a family member who's sick, or they're struggling with something themselves. And so I think even taking a couple minutes at the beginning of each call to kind of check in with people on how they're doing and how their week is going, is something that I hope we'll continue to do. And I'm certainly going to try to continue to do, because I think it's just a great kind of grounding and humanizing moment in many, what usually ends up being a really busy day.
For sure. Yeah. And I think too, we think a lot about, like, when founders are talking to VCs, we don't want to waste too much of their time. Like, they're meeting with us, they're trying to fundraise, but they're also like running a business full time and their team is working on them for things. And so I hope that some of the things we've started to do around Zoom meetings and not, I mean, we often just go to founders' offices, but kind of this culture of less of making founders come to you, especially if they're flying or driving a long way, and more, especially for early conversations, just being willing to kind of talk over Zoom. I hope some of that continues because I do feel like it adds efficiency, especially on the founder side.
It definitely does. I couldn't agree more. And whether it's the VC industry or real estate or, you know, financial services, I think we're going to see a lot less corporate travel. I really do think that there are some efficiencies coming to that market, and more than anything, just a realization that, you know, all of these conferences were just, it was becoming too much and it was a lot of wasted dollars that could have gone, could have gone elsewhere. So,
definitely. It's a big benefit, especially us being kind of introverts, not having to feel like we're missing out on a ton of conferences and events.
COVID, you guys were made for COVID.
We're lucky. We have so many friends who are really extroverted, and they're like, I just need to get out of my house and see people in person. And we're like, we're good here for a little bit.
I love it. Thanks for doing this. And look forward to reading the newsletter and keeping up on all the things you're doing.
Okay. Bye.
Take care.